Welcome to the Butts in the Seats podcast, episode number 115.
With a very special guest today.
It's the same guest as always.
But is he not special?
He's just in your lap right now.
Otto has decided that today he is a lap dog, and we will see how long this lasts because it's been a couple minutes now.
We will update the audience when this changes.
It will.
But I'm Nick alongside Emily.
Hello.
Alongside Otto von Ruthless.
Sure is.
Emily, what is it we do here?
Well, Nick, we take a week-by-week look at the slow but inevitable downfall of WCW through the late 90s and early 2000s.
And we've hit pause on that downfall for at least three weeks.
It's a plateau. It's coming back. We know it's coming back.
Yeah, and the ratings have kind of plateaued because this did like a 2.8 as opposed to like a 2.7. And it's like, yeah, it's going to hold steady for the most part until it doesn't.
Honestly, I am biding my time until we get to Bash at the Beach. I want to play, like, victory music when we start that episode, even if it's bad. Like, we know it's going to be bad, but when that episode finally starts, I want to play, like, just to, like, we're finally fucking here.
What does Peggle have to do with this?
I beat the level. That's a niche reference.
So today, we are talking about the June 26, 2000 WCW Monday Nitro, live from Des Moines, Iowa.
I know this date as the Stitch date. I don't know if that actually made its way to pop culture because it's 626. But I also think it might be the...
That's Stitch.
Yeah, Lilo and Stitch. I also think it might be the...
Wait.
Why?
What? Why is it 626?
Experiment 626.
Yeah, but what does that have to do with Iowa?
The date.
Oh, sorry. I'm like, pretty sure it takes place in Hawaii, babe.
Nah.
But I guess an important question nowadays, Nani, would you?
I don't think that's a question. The answer was always yes. Even from me, who is woefully straight.
Yeah, it's one of those, oh yeah, hear me out, Jessica Alba. It's like, you don't understand what that phrase means.
No. It's been misused enough at this point that just, it's over.
But we have this Nitro and one more until Bash of the Beach. And
I vote we barrel through.
Barrel throws in. We're not even reviewing this one. Sorry, guys.
Yeah, this one doesn't need to be reviewed, honestly. Right before we started recording, we kind of looked at each other and we're like, do you remember this episode? We didn't watch it that long ago. Like, well, 2 days?
I do have some backstage notes from the world of wrestling and all that.
Okay.
So, Gorgeous George has broken up with Randy Savage and is now debuted in ECW.
Were they actually, like, shoot dating?
Yeah.
I don't think I realized that.
Yeah, that's why she was on TV. Oh. That was literally the whole reason.
Oh. Okay, well, good for her.
The ECW Arena has a Freleese sign out front.
Mm.
I think that did change ownership. I think the 2300 Arena is now owned by different people.
I mean, like today, 2024, it's owned by different people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Apparently, Vince Russo is waiting on WCW to come crawling back to him.
And we're done. Otto has left my lap.
He heard Vince Russo. I was like, that's enough.
I'm done.
He's like,
feel that. That's enough. He has left the room. He wants nothing to do.
Otto has left the building.
He wants nothing to do with this conversation.
And now he's next to me.
He's just changed parent. You.
But yeah, Vince Russo is waiting on WCW to come crawling back to him because the show has too much wrestling, bro.
Yeah, that's a good thing. No, it's actually incredibly obvious that Vince Russo is not on this show because the wrestling is highlighted and it's interesting wrestling, and it's wrestling that's actually allowed to breathe. It's nice.
WCW Saturday Night has moved to, like, the mid-afternoon is now just a recap show. I don't know what the new name for it is.
I was gonna ask. So it can't be Saturday Night anymore.
And then I have two pieces of Hulk Hogan news.
Oh my god. Can we ever stop talking about this man?
They contradict each other.
Okay.
Hulk Hogan, at this point, is expected to win the title at Bash the Beach.
Okay.
Also, he is negotiating with Fox about a new wrestling show to the point where he was quoted like $150 million like talent budget everybody, not just for him.
Oh, I thought it was like he just was quoted $150 million salary.
Because he's going on Bubba the Love Sponge talking about this and he's like, yeah, I might be leaving after the July pay-per-view.
Oh, he's announcing his departure?
But put a pin in this. Also,
like, that is the one thing
the
I know about.
The July pay-per-view. Call it. Yeah. Know what you're wrestling at. You debuted this show. But yeah, so put a pin in this, because I honestly wasn't aware of this wrinkle to Bash the Beach.
Mm.
So we'll talk about a lot when we get there.
By the time we get to Bash of the Beach, are Bischoff and Russo back? Or I guess, is Russo back?
Yes.
He's booking Bash of the Beach.
Yes.
Gotcha.
And Bischoff is still in that unclear area of no one's saying he's gone, but like he's clearly not here.
Okay.
So no one really knows what the fuck's going on with Eric Bischoff. That said, I think it's time for a weather report. Oh no, there's thunder. What if it was, oh no, there's worldwide. So thunder recap. Rick Steiner and Tank Abbott have officially broken up. Vampiro is still trying to get Dale Torborg to embrace the demon.
That's just going to continue tonight as well.
He knocks out Dale with a shovel into an open grave. There's a new hardcore match rule. Per the cat, all hardcore matches must start in the back and end in the ring.
Oh, what? Yeah. Oh, I missed that on the recap.
Well, I'm saying this is from me actually going through. This is not from the...
Oh, yeah. I understand now.
Well, yeah, because the show does open with a thunder recap, but no, I went through to catch any of the, like, that kind of shit.
Yeah, that's wild.
We'll see how long that lasts.
They'll forget that it was even a rule.
David Flair gaslights Daphne about, like, you didn't see me kissing Miss Hancock. That was Jeff Jarrett.
That was the other blonde man who looks totally different.
It was production weird shit. So then he attacks one of the guys in the production truck and I think, like, shaves his head. It's the guy Woody who we see later. So,
oh!
Yeah, he's becoming a character for some reason. Canyon has hollowed out a book to hide a brick inside of it as a weapon.
Good to remember.
Tank Abbott is very into three count.
Not into.
No, yeah, he's a fanboy.
Yes, which is strange. What a strange trajectory career-wise this man has taken.
And the show ended with WCW champion Jeff Jarrett getting pinned clean.
Cool.
Not the most relevant. I just feel the need to keep noting that. It's like, do you care about this man at all?
No, they don't.
We'll get to that in a second because Nitro opens with a limo arriving. It's the cat and Smooth. Who is Smooth? Limo driver.
Yeah, just a random guy. Just some dude.
Yeah, they've written the show and it's like, you're my good luck charm. Stick around.
So yeah, Smooth is like giving Cat some ideas about what to go on in the show. And the cat's like, ooh, that's good. You stick with me. I'll get you, you know, whatever. Basically promising him, you know, riches and future and the company, yada yada.
So the cat comes out like to the opening pyro, basically. Because he gets a lot, and it's clearly like, all right.
Oh, yeah, it's not his.
Yeah, it's a combination of, it's done to his music, but it's clearly meant to be the opening pyro.
Yeah.
The cat says he's a great show for tonight, and hypes up Jeff Jarrett versus Hulk Hogan for the Bash, and Goldberg versus Kevin Nash. Despite saying that Jeff Jarrett versus Hogan's for the title, he then books a Fatal 4-Way world title match.
Yeah, why do we keep doing this?
I don't know. Why do you keep having Jeff Jarrett, the heel champion, who's in with management, defended it when he doesn't want to?
Yeah. I don't understand what they're doing with Jeff Jarrett. Like, it just seems like they're trying to convince him to quit.
I just realized something funny about Jeff Jarrett. Do you remember what his last WWF gimmick was prior to this?
No.
It's the women should be barefoot and pregnant.
Oh, yes.
Which I find ironic, because frankly, Jeff Jarrett in WCW should be seen, not heard.
Oh, God.
I want to see him wrestle. I don't want to see him talk about it.
That's true. I couldn't remember if that was after, like when he came back or not.
No, baby, he doesn't come back until...
He doesn't go back to WWE?
Until either late 2010s or 2020s.
I'll be damned.
Yeah, he goes to form TNA. That's the whole reason.
I know, but I thought that he came back and did one last little run in WWE before going to TNA.
No. That's the reason TNA exists, because he can't do one last run.
Okay.
That said, for this Nitro, for the 4-Way, there will be qualifying matches. It'll be Kevin Nash versus Mike Awesome, who they seem destined to feud at one point, and then they kind of cooled that off real quick.
Yeah, this doesn't bring it back to heat.
Yeah, because Mike Awesome debuted attacking Kevin Nash.
Oh, yeah.
And then they did nothing with that.
Yeah. The cat, though, I'm sorry, you're not even going through the rest of the matches yet. The cat does not seem to think that Mike Awesome even has a chance, because while he's describing the potential outcomes of this match for the tournament, he's like, Kevin Nash versus Mike Awesome, and when Nash wins, he'll be in this corner. Essentially, that's what he's saying. Like, dude.
He does circle back. I think he realizes what he did, because then he goes, oh, then, but it could be these guys.
But he does that with Goldberg, too.
We'll get to that in a sec, because the next match is Scott Steiner versus Shane Douglas. Mm-hmm. And then it's like, Goldberg gets a bye. Goldberg doesn't have to face anybody.
Oh, right.
Which prompts Hacksaw Jim Duggan to come out.
Hey-o! Yeah, this is weird.
If it wasn't for the thumbnail, I would not have been ready for Jim Duggan.
Oh, was he in the thumbnail?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God.
Immediately, USA!
Man, we clocked what this was pretty quickly.
Yes. So, I was incorrect last week when I was like, maybe they'll just brush off Goldberg being a heel. They've instead decided to just aim directly for the iceberg.
Iceberg? More like Ghostberg.
And it's like, all right, what if we had Goldberg get heat by beating up a man who survived cancer?
Oh, yeah, and they don't let you forget that either. They give him, like, later in the show, I think, but yes, they give him a whole, like, remember you love this man sort of package. Like, remember, this man is the face, and you will cheer for him, regardless of who he goes against, right?
Yeah.
Goldberg's the heel, remember?
They have an in-memoriam package for Jim Duggan in the middle of this show.
Duggan's still alive, isn't he?
Yeah. He's doing great. I was in North Carolina, and I saw a flyer, and he was, like, the headliner for indie show.
No, when he eventually does pass away, hopefully in a very long time, the in-memoriam package they're going to have for this man is going to be one for the books.
Well, I'm sure it'll be around our anniversary.
Oh my God, we're so cursed. Wrestlers keep dying around our anniversary. We're so cursed,
we didn't realize Bob Barker died on our wedding day.
We were so focused
on... Bob Barker was a former guest host of Raw.
We were so focused on Sid passing away on the day of our anniversary. They were like, oh fuck, Bob Barker too.
Bob Barker last year. That was when we missed it.
Okay, well last year we were a little busy.
Yeah. I was looking up, I'm like, oh God, did anyone else, like, famously? And I was like, wait, last year?
Yeah, last year was a bad year on our anniversary. That's an omen.
But yeah, Jim Duggan's out to the ring. He says he's been sitting around long enough, and enough is enough. Duggan says he'll stand forward with Hogan, Flair, and Sting gone, and ask, like, what have the heels done to Goldberg? I used to respect this man, and he's half the man he used to be. So the guy then calls Duggan a redneck. What is Jim Duggan's response? USA!
That's all he's got. That's all he's got.
He's doing the roll in the dice too much. That's really all he's got. If you get that reference, props to you. The cat then books Goldberg versus Duggan, and Duggan's like, well, my health might be fucked, but a man's gotta do what a man's gotta do. And Duggan does mention Eric Bischoff and Russo, where it's like, you'll have to explain when they come back why Hacksaw Jim Duggan's suddenly the world champion. And I'm like, yeah, it'd be wild.
Imagine if he did win it, spoilers, and Vince Russo and Eric Bischoff are just like watching from home, like, what the fuck?
Duggan starts one last USA chant before he leaves.
He's got one note and he's going to hit it.
So we have four matches set up for tonight.
Yeah, we've got actually a card.
I'm amazed Jeff Jarrett somehow didn't have to qualify for his own title defense.
Oh my God.
We get commentary checking in. Tony Schiavone, Mark Madden, and Scott Hudson, all with shirts.
Thank God.
Commentary note that Jeff Jarrett's probably screwed and losing the title tonight. And Tony then, you know, does the finger to the ear. Oh, what's that? Oh, we have to go suddenly to backstage.
Yeah, he kind of plays it off as like, wait, we have who doing what backstage?
It's just Vampiro in a dank room.
Dank?
It's just smoky.
Dank.
He wants Dale to bring out the demon.
He's to embrace his inner demon.
And Dale and Asia see this, and Dale says he's going to end this tonight.
This storyline came so quickly out of nowhere. Like, Dale Torborg is suddenly, like, a main character, and we haven't seen him in, like, 6 months.
Oh, apparently in those Hogan radio segments, he's also like, this fucking story sucks.
Oh, really?
That's the one he talked about.
See, we talk about him on Bubba the Love Sponge, and that literally is the only reason... Like, his interviews outside of wrestling are a little legendary, honestly. Like, they are mythical, almost. That's why I want to listen to him on the Impulsive podcast. I don't want to listen to Logan Paul's fucking podcast, but I want to hear what Hulk Hogan spews. We're recording this, like, a day or two after that episode came out, and I have not sat down to watch it yet because I can't get my brain in the right space to listen to Hulk Hogan and Logan Paul talk for a few hours. Gotta get there, though.
We talked about Bubba the Love Sponge on our most recent TNA episode on the Patreon, and we compared him to Mark Madden, and I'm like, yeah, Mark Madden never had Awesome Kong want to fight him.
So, true.
And I'm like, I want to see that match. I want to see Awesome Kong in a handicap match against Mark Madden and Bubba the Love Sponge, and fuck it, throw Man Cow in there.
Honestly, Awesome Kong would ruin them.
Yes.
Yes.
That is my hope. I want to be clear. Backstage, Shane Douglas is told he's facing Scott Steiner tonight in the tournament and isn't happy. And
yeah, no kidding.
Then we see Canyon at a book signing and no one's there.
Oh, so sad.
It's like, well, I would have gone.
You would have gone?
Yeah. Me, Canyon.
Signing a fake book?
Yeah. It's the best kind. I don't have to pretend to read it.
Oh my God. Yeah, as you're sitting next to our bookshelf full of books and none of them you've read.
I totally have read.
We have the whole Game of Thrones series. How many of those did you read?
I watched them. I lived the Game of Thrones. We then go to a very strange already in the ring team. It is Mark Jindrak and Sean O'Hare. Which your reaction was, look at these fucking jobbers.
They look like jobbers. Yeah. Honestly, it's the shorts. It's the shorts trunks.
It's very John Cena, ruthless yes. aggression look.
Yes. Because these men, it really does come down to the wardrobe for me. That's how I can tell what level they are in the company. If you're wearing the undies, you can be taken seriously. If you're wearing leggings, you can be taken seriously. The short trunks, who the fuck do you think you are?
Now, the filthy animals come out. Can we take them seriously?
It just gets worse every week.
Ray hasn't even debuted his fucking devil horns yet.
Oh, no.
I don't know if that's a long thing or a short thing, admittedly.
Well, hey, Nick, that's the way we like it.
Well, honestly, I've accidentally started predicting things a week out.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Oh, no. Like a week or so ago, I was like, yeah, I know Tank Abbott joins up with 3 Count at some point. Fucking now.
I'm like, oh, yeah, you're right.
Also, spoilers, I did that with TNA on the most recent episode like 3 times. I'm like, what?
Damn. You have a wild memory, man.
I guess just storylines happen for much shorter than I think. But yeah, so it is Mark Jindrak and Sean O'Hare versus Juventud Guerrera and Rey Mysterio, who, I remind you, is still not healthy.
My theory was, did they give Rey Mysterio an easier match against 2 green jobbers because he's still injured? But I don't think the way he wrestled, I don't think that's the case.
Yeah, I'm kind of suddenly understanding why Rey Mysterio needs so many fucking knee surgeries in his life. Because
he doesn't know how to stop. He's not a stop and heal.
The Filthy Animals cut a nonsensical promo at the start of this. Like, they're all over the place. We do get a feel that that's enough, but like...
It's so quick and fleeting. Like, he's not really leaning into the essence of that part of his promo.
They're focusing more on, whoop-de-whoop-jigga-what? Whoop-de-whoop-jigga-what? I hate it.
At least I didn't say hooty hoo this time. It just gets worse, man. Like, I don't understand what's happening with these. This was my favorite faction. I loved the Filthy Animals. Yeah. What happened?
Conan started talking.
But we didn't hate him when he was talking originally. Olale, arriba la raza. Like, that was funny. The fucking strawberries. Like, that's funny. We liked that. That's the way we like it.
The rookies throw the Filthy Animals around early. O'Hare catches Hoovy midair and press slam throws him. Hoovy slides under but eats an O'Hare clothesline. Mark Jindrak tags in and looks like a fucking giraffe yep. walking for the first time.
He sure does.
His first punch he throws. He throws it left-handed. I'm actually going to Google search right now. I don't know if there's going to be an answer. Is Mark Jindrak lefty? Because it didn't look like it, and that has me worried.
Maybe he was trying to, like, make sure that he didn't hit the punch. Maybe he didn't trust his ability to pull back or not actually hit somebody. So he's like, oh, with my left hand, even if I do hit him, it won't be as strong. Like, maybe he's trying to, like, trick his brain.
No, he is lefty.
Oh, well, that's just sad then.
By the way, fun fact about Mark Jindrak. He was originally going to be the 4th member of Evolution. It was going to be him, not Batista.
Wow.
They filmed vignettes with him.
Wow.
And Triple H is like, he's not the guy. He doesn't fit. I'm like, ah, he fits, pal. What are you talking about?
How can you put Dave Batista next to Mark Jindrak and like say, oh yeah, they could totally fit the same role?
But yeah, Jindrak has fucking nothing here. Like, you know, O'Hare's still new, but O'Hare like has some presence.
Yeah, he does. He kind of gets it.
I do have a little bit of bias of like, I believe a bit in Sean O'Hare.
I believe in Joe Hendry.
But Jindrak manages to successfully miss a lion salt without diving, but he takes his fucking time on it.
Yes, he does.
He like goes over to the ropes, like stops, grabs the top rope. All right, let's do this.
Get nice. Balance.
But he doesn't neck himself, so.
There's something to be said for that. Like, yeah, he's slow, but he's safe.
Hoovy and Ray hit some double team action, and Hoovy hits a missile dropkick. The Filthy Animals then hit a was up type move, but Ray does a leg drop as opposed to a headbutt.
I like that better.
It is less face to the taint action.
Yeah, so. And I feel like a leg drop, you can get more power almost because you can kind of follow through with the leg. You can't really follow through with the head.
The Filthy Animals just kind of work over Jindrak to like little ref issue. It's one of these things again where both men are just in the ring. Ref is like, hey,
Stop it.
Sean O'Hare, you kick him in, though. Like, fuck you. They try for some sort of move, but Jinjack ducks, and they end up scissoring midair.
Scissor me, daddy ass.
Sean O'Hare hits a diving clothesline to both men, and then the rookies hit stereo suplexes. O'Hare throws Ray out of the ring, and Jindrak hits a tilt-a-whirl slam before a Shauntan bomb for the win with the rookies.
I was actually very surprised that the rookies won.
Post-match, the other Filthy Animals attack the rookies until Lance Storm comes in from the crowd again and takes out the Filthy Animals.
He's gonna be serious for a second, regardless of whether you will allow him.
Yeah, this was a decent match.
Honestly, this was a little bit of fun. Yeah. It was rough watching the new guys for a minute or two there, and it did sort of fall apart with the Filthy Animals at one or two points, but this was just a bit of fun, and it was nice to see some new faces that actually can hold their own.
Yeah, I don't know how competent Sean O'Hare actually is, or is he just next to Mark Jindrak?
Right.
Yeah, I mean, I constantly hear good things about Sean O'Hare. We watched The Invasion, so I've probably seen a Sean O'Hare match, but I don't remember any of his stuff. I think the main thing people know him for, in the benefit of total hindsight in 2024, is he had a Devil's Advocate gimmick on SmackDown.
Oh, this is ringing a vague bell.
He also got weirdly paired with Roddy Piper in 2003, but he would just come out like a white background and be like, come on, no one's going to know. Do it. Like, cheat on your wife. Gamble. It's fine. Like,
I have a vague memory of this. It never
went anywhere, though. That was the problem.
Yeah.
It was just vignettes, and then he came out and wrestled Sean O'Hare.
Yeah. Huh.
He does team with Chuck Palumbo during the invasion.
Who are you, Chuck Palumbo?
I don't know if they teamed before that. I don't expect a lot of continuity of teams from WCW to the invasion.
Next week on Nitro, see Chuck Palumbo match up with Sean O'Hare.
And Chris Jericho's going to suddenly come back.
Oh, my God.
And so is the Ultimate Warrior, and everyone's going to pop in for 2 minutes.
Yep, just to fuck up Nick.
Backstage, the Filthy Animals yell at the Cat, so he recruits them to go get Lance Storm. And they're like, are we going to get paid more? No, go get him.
No.
In a locker room, Jim Duggan is getting ready, and his wife begs him to not wrestle Goldberg.
Again, this man is a face. Are you sure that you would ever boo him? No, right? Because he's a face. This man has survived cancer. His wife is crying for him to not do this, but his honor is making him have to fight this. A man. Don't boo this man, please, for the love of God.
Ned Stark's totally going to make it out of season one. What are you talking about?
You know what's great? Being alive.
He's a man of honor.
A lot about Game of Thrones all of a sudden this episode.
Ugh. Well, we're going to shift from Game of Thrones to The Sopranos, because Big Vito comes out to the ring with his Stugats.
Stugats.
He has a mic and some sticks. They're like, oh, it's stickball sticks. I'm like, sure.
What the fuck is stickball?
It's somewhere between baseball and cricket.
Because isn't baseball stickball? Isn't a baseball bat just a stick?
Yeah, I think it's literally just you have a stick, and that's the difference, because kids couldn't afford bats back in the day. You're like,
but what is a bat if not a stick persevering?
No one remembers WandaVision, Emily.
That wasn't in WandaVision.
Was it not?
That was in the movie.
That was the
preface for WandaVision. That was not in WandaVision. That was in Was it Endgame? But that was 100%
No, it's WandaVision.
That is not in WandaVision.
It is.
Nuh-uh.
It is. Because it's about letting him go.
I thought that was the last thing that Vision said to Wanda in the movie. We quoted that too much for it to be from WandaVision.
It's from 2021, babe, so that could be.
That was only 21?
It's from WandaVision.
Fuck. I really thought that was from the movie. Why did we quote that so much? Did we watch WandaVision?
Yeah. We quoted because it was stupid.
Leave all that in.
Anyway, stickball. Sorry, a match.
Fuck, wrestling.
Vito says he's heard the people talking. They're saying he's the best hardcore champion to ever live. And commentary's like, whoa, that's a bit extreme. Yeah, name every WCW hardcore champion. There's five of them. At least the good ones.
Oh, you're a fan of hardcore? Name every champion.
It's not hard. There's not that many.
Don't gatekeep fandoms.
Okay, he's the 10th champion, but it's not that much.
Oh my God.
I said Norman Smiley is better.
Yes, absolutely, he's a better champion.
But Vito offers a challenge to anyone in the back, which, this is not a match, weirdly. Mm. However, because of Thunder, all hardcore matches have to start in the back.
Right.
So I'm like, oh fuck, is that the explanation for this?
I guess, because that does help a lot of explanation.
Because Emily, who answers the open challenge?
It's Jamie-san and the Young Dragons, well, no, brother.
It's just Jamie-san.
Is it just Jamie-san? I thought it was all of them.
At first, because they come out later. I'm like, what the fuck?
Jamie-san, baby.
He gets beat down almost immediately by Vito. So Yang comes out, but then he gets walloped. So Katasayashi comes out and hits a springboard dropkick and then a spin kick. The Young Dragons finally get some offense, all hit top rope dives to Vito, and then all hit a triple dive from the same turnbuckle onto Vito. I'm like, Jesus.
So I think that could have looked cooler. I don't think it had the same visual impact that they wanted it to have.
Well, I think it's because they all go for leg drops, and Yang gets the legs of the situation. How yes. the fuck do you do that?
Yeah.
But Yang counts a pin for one of them, and Tony Schiavone, who has seen some wrestling in his day, is like, oh my God, we have a new champion. It's like, it's not a match. Tony. It's not how any of this works.
Tony.
Tony, I know you're checked out, but come on, dude.
We have done, what, 115? Yeah. 115 episodes of this podcast?
Yeah.
He knows how the fuck this shit works. If we have done 115 episodes, he has been on at least 100 of those.
I think he's maybe missed one WCW one, but like, that's it.
Yeah, he knows what the fuck is going on. He knows the rules. The man is still in 2024 working in the wrestling industry. He knows how wrestling works. It doesn't work like that.
Yeah, so they're not the champions. Vito still is.
Yeah, no kidding.
We then see Terry Funk backstage teaching John of the Bull and then just blindsides him with a chair and is like, you have to watch your back.
I mean, it's good teaching, I guess. It's not, but like solidifies that Funk and Johnny the Bull are working together and Funk is like training Johnny the Bull.
The Perfect Event then come into the production truck and they're a little cringy and they're like, oh, it's another Perfect production. Ugh. They harass Woody, the
production guy.
Yeah, the local tech, and he leaves. So then we see Shane Douglas talking to Smooth about trying to leave. He's like, I don't want to face Scott Steiner. If you don't do that, you're going to get fired. And I did appreciate a little thing Shane Douglas did in this promo. And I mean this genuinely. Because he potentially has a shot at the world title tonight. So he should want to be in this match. But yeah. He's like, no, I'm the franchise. I'm going to end up getting tons of title matches. Like, he actually believes that.
Oh, okay.
So I'm like, I like that little note that it's like, it's not someone going, fuck, I could win. He's like, this seems too hard. I'm going to get plenty of title matches. It's fine.
That's a little bit of characterization. I like that. Yeah.
So that's just world building and logic. I'm like, holy shit.
Yeah. Give him something. Okay.
That is the one plus of taking yourself too seriously, is that you create reasons for things.
That's true.
Oh, God. I can only imagine a Bret Hart versus Shane Douglas feud. I'd say that's somebody who loves Bret, but
I feel like that would be just so much talking and not so much wrestling. They would each just be cutting individual promos at each other.
Depending on the year, if you bring up Ric Flair, your story's out the window. They're just going to cut promos on Flair for 3 hours.
Oh, God.
Bret and Rick are better now, but there was a little while where it was like, no, fuck this guy.
Oh, really? Yeah. I don't think I realized there was that much heat between them.
I think everybody always has heat with Flair at some point.
Why does everybody hate Ric Flair?
Because he's Ric Flair. But Smooth has an idea for Shane Douglas to get out of the match, and we'll get more of this in a second, because the Filthy Animals form up to look for Lance Storm, and they have a line of like, well, he's Canadian, so he's probably stupid, so this should be easy. And then we see Shane Douglas feigning an injury to the Cat, and the Cat's like, well, you have to wrestle, but then they decide on, all right, what if Buff Bagwell takes your place?
I mean, this is such a simple solution, but I'm surprised it worked.
Buff is now going to face Scott Steiner, so it's like, all right, Steiner will kill Buff, it'll be great. However, you did just give Buff a potential title shot.
Yeah.
Douglas slips Smooth some cash, and Smooth's like, all right, cool, great. Will we see Smooth next week, you think?
No. This is the one and done for Smooth.
Then in the back, Tank Abbott pulls up a chair to watch Three Count's performance, and he dances along to Three Count's new song until, oh no, there's production issues.
What? How?
It's the Perfect Event, you know, I guess managing to figure out kinda an audio board, because Woody then finds Tank Abbott, like, oh, it's them fucking with him. I'll show you where they are. Tank then drags Palumbo out of the truck. Sean Stasiak just kind of follows.
Yeah, I'm not totally sure why he just followed.
I mean, he takes his belt, but, like, that's it.
Yeah, you should have gone the other way. You should have run away. Been like, no, I can do this without him now.
Now, despite the fact that they have been dragged out of the production truck, the intermittent production issues are still going.
They fucked it up so bad that it was just like, they ruined all of it.
Tank Abbott then throws the tag champs in the ring, and he's like, all right, this is now a title match because I said so. Mm. And it is. Like, oh, what?
Okay.
So somehow, Tank Abbott declaring a tag title match that he's not involved in is fine. Vito making an open challenge for the hardcore title, no ref.
I mean, Tony Schiavone did call this out. Like, since when is Tank Abbott booking matches?
I was going to say, well, Tony Schiavone did call that a match, so.
No. He called out this hypocrisy of, like, why are we listening to Tank Abbott when he's booking matches?
But, yeah, it's now a tag team title match. It is three count. The duo here is Shane Helms and Shannon Moore versus The Perfect Event. And let's just talk about it a little bit now. This match is heel versus heel, and that really hits the crowd.
It does. I think this is a bad match for other reasons.
This match goes for a little bit, but like three count of heat, The Perfect Event don't. Nope. And the crowd just kind of like, they have a little something on hate on three count, and then they just lose it, it feels yeah. like. But three count slip out of press slams and hit delayed dives to the floor because they're like standing on the top rope waiting to dive. And The Perfect Event are just, like, hugging and huddling. It's like...
Yeah, why are they hugging?
Yeah. Dude, they are balancing. Get the fuck over there.
Can you please? That was the weirdest thing. Like, they were on the apron, or not the apron. They were ringside in an embrace. Not, like, a huddle, like, let's strategize. They were hugging.
Yeah, and...
Very strange.
Freak out, crash a little bit.
Yeah, because they probably lost their balance a little.
Stasiak suddenly has a muscle flexor as Freak Out hit a double neck breaker in the ring. Stasiak hits a gut-wrench sit-out powerbomb after he tags in. Helms gets worked over, but counters a powerbomb and turns it into a tornado DDT, and he makes the tag to Dilly Gaff, who hits a hot tag sequence.
Dilly Gaff.
Chuck Palumbo catches Moore out of the air and hits a fallaway slam. The tag champs go for some double team action, but Moore counters and hits a springboard top rope Frankensteiner, and then a diving splash from Helms. Palumbo breaks up the pin with a muscle flexor shot behind the ref's back. You don't need to distract him. It's fine.
No.
And then the tag champs hit their double flapjack on Helms as Shannon Moore just kind of watches him get pinned from the apron. Kind of weird there.
Yeah.
The tag champs win and immediately Chronic. like the bell doesn't even ring. It's just like, no, Chronic is here now. Chronic beat down The Perfect Event to their song playing this whole time. And they hit the high time on Palumbo and Stasiak. And it's like, okay.
Sure.
Three count then get back in the ring, and Helms is like, oh no, play our music because we want to dance. So Chronic hear this and then go back to the ring to attack three count. Tank Abbott suddenly reappears and knocks out both Brian Adams and Brian Clark and then leaves with three count. But before they leave, off mic, he says, hit the music. The music hits. He grabs the mic. Hit the music. It's already playing.
It's already playing, dude.
This was a fucking mess.
This was a nightmare of a match.
This was overall a mess of all of this. Mm-hmm. However, three count keep looking good.
Oh, I love three count. I'm sad that three count is part of this match that I deemed pretty bad.
Yeah.
Like, I love them and I want to continue to see them thrive. And I'm happy that we're even like seeing them at all. I mean, in a Vince Russo era, we would never see these guys ever again. But I think this match is bad. I agree. But I think it's bad for a different reason than you think it is.
I mean, I think mine has a lot to do with the general heat and structure, but what is your...
Sure, and I think that mine would probably build on that. I think this match is bad because of the booking. Like, maybe it's similar of what you're saying. But what I'm saying is, this should have been a 30-second squash match. This should have solidified Tank with three count. If that's the storyline they're going to go with, and that's what's next for Tank. This should have been 30 seconds. Tank destroys... Perfect Event backstage, knocks them out, drags them to the ring, throws them in the ring, says three count, pin them, and then they're the champs. That should have solidified that core together and just been done with it.
I think there's two ways you can do that without making three count the champs, because I don't. That's clearly not what they want to do.
I know, but that's what this should have been.
I think the two ways you can do that is, one, just don't make it a title match.
Yeah.
Or two, you can do something where Tank Abbott means well, but he like overdoes it, where... they have a title match and he kills them and throws them in the ring. And it's like, well, they can't compete because you killed them.
Okay, yeah.
So, like, you can't win the titles right now, despite the fact that you probably could because they're not clear to compete.
Okay, I would like that too.
Yeah, I think that's two ways you could do it. This was just the worst of all the worlds.
Yeah. Because, like, this did not really make clear that Tank is with three count.
It did,
but it didn't.
It makes it that Tank is with three count, not that three count is with Tank.
Yes. It makes it that Tank is a fanboy, not that they are an allyship. They're not a team. three count is not, doesn't have any reason to be with Tank. Why would they?
Yeah, like, they need someone to, like, come threaten them, and then he makes the save. Like, yeah. Kind of, like, they kind of did that with Chronic, but...
But not enough.
The problem is, it's still three of them against two of Chronic. So it's like, all right, they should be fine. Because the funny thing is, when Tank knocks out, I think it's Bryan Adams, he's going to go for a double choke slam. The third member of Chronic is there about to break it up, because there's three of them.
Right.
I have no idea how long this lasts. All I know is Tank Abbott apparently was offered a chance to get, like, dancing or singing lessons, and he goes, I'm not going to get better. It'll be funnier if I suck.
I do kind of love that.
Yeah.
I mean, I likened that to...
Is this going
to
be the Tank Abbott redemption arc?
No, I don't think so. This is going down the path of R-Truth, and I know this is a hot take. I do not like R-Truth. I don't think he's funny. I don't think he's talented. I don't think he's an enjoyable watch on TV. That's just my opinion. I recognize that a lot of people love him. I recognize talented. Maybe in ring. Maybe he is a good wrestler. I don't know for sure. I don't watch him because I don't find him compelling. I don't like the idea of a wrestler just to be being played off as, like, ditzy or stupid or just, like, you know, the moron. Like, I don't think that's a good character. And this is starting to border on that for me of, like, he's kind of like playing like the blonde girl, you know, like, I just love NSYNC and Backstreet Boys, and that's it.
I'm
he's kind
so of going sad with that Pamela attitude. Paul Shock is not up next, because that's a perfect segue.
Oh my God, you're right. Oh. But I don't like that trope, and I feel like Tank is starting to encroach on that trope.
Yeah, unfortunately, a lot of the he's with the Judgment Day stuff, I was kind of getting Eugene thinks he's an Evolution vibes.
Yeah.
Like, R-Truth's mental incompetence has me have a hard time rooting for him, because I don't think him getting the upper hand means anything to the character.
No, it doesn't. You're right. Like, a character like R-Truth will never have, like, a comeuppance, yeah. You know, a redemption arc,
well,
or something.
We saw them win the tag titles at WrestleMania.
Yeah.
And it meant nothing to him. Like, it's not, like, rewarding for the character.
No. Like, that kind of a character is just like, I just want to hang out with my friends.
Yeah.
Wrestling is secondary.
Remember when they had him come out in a Confederate general's outfit?
No.
Yep.
When was that?
2011, baby.
Oh my God. The 2010s That's, were such a fucking
That is the pay-per-view thing. Before the pipe bomb.
Oh my God.
Technically, the pipe bomb comes after the remnants of that pay-per-view match, because they do John Cena versus R-Truth in a tables match the night after, and that's when the pipe bomb happens.
Jesus.
And everyone kind of forgot about all that.
Maybe for the best.
Anyway, we're talking about WSW.
Anyway, yeah, sorry. Tank Abbott.
Well, no, we're moving on from that.
Okay.
Juventud Guerrera is backstage looking for Lance Storm and is hit with a pipe out of nowhere.
Oh no, how did this happen?
Canyon's book signing is suddenly going well, but he's been offering free beer.
Oh, is that what it was?
Yeah, it was drink vouchers, anybody over 21.
Gotcha. Now, I was not following that bit.
Notably, all of these say earlier today, we couldn't have just done this all at once.
No.
And then we get a video package. Rest in peace, Jim Duggan. We hardly knew you.
This really is giving final retirement match vibes for Jim Duggan. This is the promo package before the Goldberg Duggan match. Yeah. This is, if you in case you missed it, don't boo this man.
Additionally, this is the embodiment of one of Emily and I's favorite movie or TV tropes, where it's the, you know what's great? Being alive. Let's make plans for when I get back. Oh,
let's
man,
talk
this,
about Christmas.
This, yeah. This, when I get back from Afghanistan, we're going to get married and have all these kids. And
yep.
Yep. It's
going to be great. When that happens.
I don't know what your, like, go-to for this is, but mine is the movie Pearl Harbor.
I don't know what mine is.
Because the Pearl Harbor one is two of my favorite tropes together, where it's that combined with love triangle solved by somebody dying so no one has to make a hard decision.
Yes. God, that's true. I don't know what my go-to is. Unfortunately, the first movie that popped into my head is Remember Me.
Coming soon to Patreon, conspiracy theories with Jesse Ventura. So it's time for a funeral. It's Jim Duggan versus Bill Goldberg.
Yeah, I bet it is time for a funeral.
Oh, God. If Jim Duggan dies before this episode comes out, we're going to have to re-record this whole bit.
We're going to re-record this. Oh my god.
So Jim Duggan comes out with the 2x4 like he does. Oh. The cat comes out and is like, no, you can't use that. I'm banning it. You know, like most matches. What a heel.
How dare you.
It's like, oh, also no outside interference. What a heel. Goldberg comes out. They actually managed to find some more anti-Goldberg signs this week, and he does seemingly get booed, or they audio sweeten better.
Yeah, it's hard to say. They did find more anti-Goldberg signs. I'm wondering if people from last week took the hint of like, hey, this guy with the anti-Goldberg signs, the one getting air, let's all do anti-Goldberg. Or did the cameras just do a better job sweeping the audience and like find the signs to come back to?
They go nose to nose immediately and then trade bunches until like Duggan gets the upper hand and hits a bunch.
He does, yeah.
Goldberg clotheslines Duggan when the ref pulls him away, and then they go to the outside. Goldberg pushes Duggan to the ring post and throws him back in. Goldberg then hits punches to Duggan's kidney, but Duggan powers out of a rest hold and Goldberg smashes him in the corner. Duggan slams Goldberg and signals for the 3-point stance, but Goldberg is immediately up and spears Duggan, apparently right in the kidneys.
So, okay.
Okay, yes, you're... yeah, go on. I go to the floor.
Did he lose a kidney, or does he have bad kidneys?
I think he lost one.
So, is Goldberg spearing where a kidney once was, and therefore does it hurt?
More like Ghostberg. Ghostberg kidney. Ghost kidney.
I was just having a hard time wrapping my head around the fact of, like, is he spearing an empty space and that hurts? Or is he spearing, like, an inflamed kidney?
Like, which one's worse?
I don't... Well, the inflamed kidney would be more painful.
By the way, we should note, he just does a spear. It's the same move.
It's just a spear. But also, we don't know which side he lost the kidney on, so is he aiming for the one good kidney, or is he hitting the empty kidney? I can't wrap my head around it.
Oh, this celery is just empty kidneys. Oh my
God. You burn more kidneys than you do when you're eating it.
Goldberg gets a jackhammer to the kidneys.
The kidney.
His commentary is disgusted. Because he's setting up for it. And he's like, someone needs to stop this. This has gone too far. I'm like, what? He does the move he always does?
But to a lack of a kidney, Nick.
He pins Jim Duggan, and then he hits more kidney punches to really make sure you boo him.
Oh, yeah. If you haven't caught on that you should be booing Goldberg at this point, where is your heart?
Goldberg then taunts Nash to the camera, and this is to distract the fact that the ref is clearly giving Jim Duggan some sort of capsule to put in his mouth, because he's just spilling a bunch of sauce.
Yeah, all of a sudden.
Oh, too much marinara.
Tony Marinara.
Yeah, so Duggan's bleeding from the mouth, and then is stretchered out, and we were ready, because the either real or fake EMTs put the stretcher the wrong way, because there was an incline on the stretcher, and the way they were rolling him out, I'm like, he's going to be like...
Head to face down ass. Yeah.
They flipped it, so we were fine.
They did, but we were ready.
But yeah, his wife comes out to sell this.
Distraught. This poor woman.
I was going to ask, is she better or worse than Sandman's wife? But she didn't take a bump, so.
Oh, yeah, no. Laura is my MVP forever.
I think it's Lori.
Maybe it's Lori. Lori is my MVP. Lori Sandman.
As he's getting stretchered out, some jobbers in the locker room are like distraught about this.
Okay, yeah. What was this combination of people? Because it was Lash LaRue, three guys we didn't recognize, and was it Jindrak and O'Hare?
No, I forget who it was, but it was just a motley crew.
It was an odd mishmash of people. We like paused and looked at these guys. We're like, am I just having like face blindness? Do I not remember who the fuck these guys are? But then you with Lizard Brain had no idea who they were either, so I felt a little bit more justified.
Yeah, the only one I was like, is that Mike Sanders? Looked it up. That is not Mike Sanders. Back from commercial, he's being loaded into an ambulance, and Kevin Nash is upset. He's gone too far.
Okay.
Which brings us to Kevin Nash versus Mike Awesome, but I guess first, let's actually reflect on that match. Thoughts on that whole match and segment?
That was fucking bonkers.
Was it effective?
I mean, yes. It was effective.
Yeah.
That was like a last-ditch effort of like, if this doesn't work, we're screwed.
And I think Goldberg kind of got the memo of, please stop hyping up the crowd like a face.
I agree.
So, there is that.
It worked. Yeah. That's about all I can say for it. Yeah, it wasn't a good match. It was fine.
I think it's really good use of Jim Duggan, honestly.
Yes, I agree. Was he just, like, hanging out backstage all these weeks?
Yeah.
I hope he was home.
Remember when he found the television title in the trash and then it got vacated and never got a champion again?
Remember when his whole thing was just cleaning toilets?
I thought his whole thing was USA!
Yeah, he was screaming USA into the toilets.
Oh. So our next match is Mike Awesome versus Kevin Nash.
In the mind of commentary, Mike Awesome has absolutely zero chance of winning this match. And they don't hide it.
Nash hits an early back suplex and they go to the corner. I was ready for that.
I have two bullet points in this and I already said one of them.
Nash hits his framed up elbow and stops a German suplex, but eats a clothesline in the corner and then a diving clothesline from Awesome. Awesome hits a frog splash and then signals for the Awesome Bomb, which commentary is like, what's he gonna go for? His finisher.
Guys, have you never watched the show? Do you not know what you're doing?
Nash then counters, clotheslines Awesome to the floor. They brawl around ringside and Mike Awesome grabs a steel chair. Back in the ring, Nash big boots into Awesome's face and pins him.
And that's it.
Yeah. The fuck?
Very quick match.
Yeah. What the hell are you doing with Mike Awesome?
What the hell are you doing with Kevin Nash?
Not having him lose.
The man is so boring to watch because you know he's not going to lose.
Spoilers, he does get pinned in the main event.
Okay, well.
But yeah, he constantly, we got to make him look strong, brother.
Like, why? He's strong. We know he's strong.
But yeah, what the hell are you doing with Mike Awesome? He came in and was like, could have been a big deal, and then he had to be a heavy. And Emily, I'm going to say a phrase to you that I know kicks in the next 3 weeks.
So next week.
Potentially. I'm pretty sure he has it at Bash the Beach. Mike Awesome is going to get a gimmick that is the Fat Chick Thriller.
What?
Yep. You have that to look forward to. Backstage, Rey Mysterio has been attacked. Thriller. Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, Rey Mysterio's attacked. I did note here, I'm like, okay, no, they're treating this like a mystery.
Yes, they are.
Because in my brain, like, oh, it's Lance Storm. And it's like, oh no, like, we're hiding who was attacking them.
Yes. But Tigress comes to find Rey and, like, come to his aid after he gets hurt. And she calls him Poppy. There is a mommy joke in here somewhere.
Yeah. It's Angie.
Well, no, Dom has his mommy yeah. and his Poppy.
Oh, yeah. I guess true. Dom is married and had his mommy. I guess Angie's okay with this.
I guess.
Back from commercial, Conan is also hit from behind in catering.
Yeah, so basically all of the filthy animals are done for.
Besides Disco.
Does he matter? Is he a filthy animal?
Well, he doesn't get taken out because he has a thing later.
But is he a filthy animal?
How filthy is he?
He's as much of a filthy animal as Juventud is, really. And the fact that Juventud got taken out is kind of shocking.
Let's go to our next qualifying match for the main event. It's Buff Bagwell versus Scott Steiner. A match I feel like we've seen a good handful of times, and I'm always, that's all right.
Yeah.
And spoilers on this match. Yeah, that's all right.
Yeah, it was fine. Like, you kind of forget that these two were paired up and had all this history not that long ago.
Apparently, they do not like each other.
Shocking.
That said, spot of the fucking year.
Oh, yeah.
Buff Bagwell does his buff taunt. In response, Steiner just gives him the finger.
Oh, yeah. So simple.
The comedic timing on it. Just perfect. The taunt, a breath. Fuck you.
Just get fucked. Just get fucked. Oh, it was so good. It was so perfect. And you know I'm not the biggest Scott Steiner fan, but that was so... Mwah.
Steiner beats down Buff and hits his flexing elbow drop. Buff vaults over in the corner and hits a spinning neck breaker. Then he hits a Vader bomb in the corner, but Scott runs Buff back first into the corner and chokes him while he's upside down. Steiner hits a T-bone suplex and tries for a Steiner recliner, which notably is banned. Because commentary is even like, oh, he needs to watch out for that move. No, he doesn't.
No.
That should be good, because then you'd win by DQ, and then you go to the finals.
I think we've all forgotten. I don't think anybody actually watches Thunder.
They talked about it on Nitro last week.
Does anybody watch Nitro? In production, I mean.
Buff slips out of the Steiner recliner attempt and hits a double arm DDT, and then a blockbuster. Only gets a two.
Damn.
Steiner then suddenly hits his spinning belly to belly for the win. It's like, oh, I guess you're using that now. Kind of weird.
I don't know. This match was so underwhelming. I didn't really pay any attention to the finishers that were utilized. Just like, can we just be done?
Post-match, Steiner and Buff shake hands, do a little hug. Shane Douglas slips in to attack Buff, but Steiner quickly chases him off after like a move or two. This kind of felt like it unintentionally, or maybe intentionally, buried Buff.
Yeah, you mentioned this like immediately after watching the match. Say more about it.
It just seemed like it was a message of, no, he's not on that level.
What do you mean?
That like he is mid-card. He's not even on the upper echelon anymore. Mm. It's like he hit his finisher, Steiner kicked out, and then hit like a C-tier Scott Steiner move and pinned him.
Yeah.
And then he gets attacked and the guy who beat him has to come save him.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it was intentional, but it just made him look a little Bush League and not like, I think they were maybe trying to like, oh, it's a competitive matchup, but it just made Buff seem kind of shit.
Yeah.
Which he is, but.
He is.
Yeah, I think this did Buff absolutely no favors.
It did him dirty.
It almost seemed like they were sabotaging him because additionally, they do their entrances and it's like, Buff does his. Hey. Scott Steiner comes out and is a way bigger star. And yeah. It's way more of a reaction. Yeah. It's like, no, you need to do this with like Buff facing a heel.
Yeah, to like build him up a little bit more. But this was like a last minute match, whatever.
Yeah, it wouldn't have gotten the Goldberg heel shit, but like have him hold his own with Goldberg, who's a killer right now. Like that's how you kind of get him going. Especially if you go, yeah, we're going to do Shane Douglas versus Goldberg. Douglas is like, oh, I don't want to fucking do that. Like, yeah, that it all still tracks if you do this with Goldberg instead.
Yeah.
However, how else are you going to kill Jim Duggan? And we have to do that.
We have to do the Jim Duggan thing, obviously. Honestly, I think that the Jim Duggan Goldberg match was more effective than this match. Yeah. So,
yeah.
If you had to cut one, I would have cut this one. Yeah. That being said, though, can we acknowledge that you said the word killer and you did not make a Relic joke? Well, I'm very proud of segment. You. But you would have found a way. I'm proud of you.
Let's go backstage. It's Pamela Paulshock.
Hell yeah, Pamela Pumpkins.
She's here with Jeff Jarrett.
Oh my God, it's almost her time of year.
Wow, Jeff Jarrett, you could not even be involved and lose the title. That's so wild.
Listen here, you blonde slap nut.
For some reason, the slap nut singular made it even funnier.
It's not meant to be funny, but every time he says slap nut, it's funny.
Jarrett says he'll walk out champion tonight and then...
Yeah, I know he will.
Tells Hogan to get out of his walker and come to Bash the Beach.
He'll be there. So will you. For the title match.
Backstage, Daphne sees Miss Hancock leave David Flair's dressing room. Miss Hancock comes out to the ring and says she's a bad girl trapped in a good girl's body.
So can we think about the logistics of this real quick?
Sure.
So Stacy just left David's dressing room in a bit of a like flushed hurry and just comes straight to the ring. So you can kind of theorize that Stacy and David were just boinking in the dressing room.
Riding she came Space out Mountain.
And did a victory speech, essentially. She did the female speech version of I just had sex. Like, what a baller move. Like, that is such a power move from her. I'm actually very impressed if that is what happened. Like, that's pretty sick.
Oh, so I said Space Mountain, but I actually have a different name for David Flair's sex penis, whatever.
His sex penis as opposed to his what? Recreational penis?
No, I'm saying sex, comma, penis, whatever.
Sex, okay.
Because it's never been clear on what Space Mountain actually is with Ric Flair.
Good point.
David's the Barnstormer.
Which one's the Barnstormer?
The really shitty children's ride. Oh my God. In Mickey's Toontown or whatever the fuck, it's New Fantasyland. The one that's like not nearly as exciting and you're underwhelmed when you ride it.
Nick's Disney adult is kind of peeking out. Yeah, in case you didn't know, Nick's a little bit of a Disney adult.
I used to be friends with Goofy.
And Chewbacca.
I don't know that we said that on the podcast.
No, before. You never have. You guys were besties.
Yeah, it's great.
For a hot minute. Anyway. So anyway, Stacy comes out to the ring and she just does a whole speech about it's so hard to be a bad girl. Like, Stace.
Stace says, I'm going to get naked.
Like, I just had sex and it's just so great being me, but it's so hard being in these clothes. Like, that was the vibe.
Nobody better clip that. You perverts. There's at least two of you.
Call them out.
Daphne comes out in the two cat fight. They trade slaps, go back to cat fighting. Somehow, Daphne spears Miss Hancock, and this results in Miss Hancock getting up and, like, pulling out some of Daphne's hair. Like, what?
Yeah, just, like, grabs her by the hair.
And then I'm like, oh, that's it. Oh, wait, never mind. Daphne has a mic. And says she's going to ruin Stacy's life and challenges Miss Hancock to a match at Bash at the Beach. And she's going to send Stacy back to the Hooters they found her in.
They didn't find her at a Hooters, did they? Was she a Hooters girl?
I don't know.
I thought she was a Ravens cheerleader.
She was, but there used to be a Hooters in the Inner Harbor.
You know, that's a good point. Oh my God. Can you imagine if they just closed that Hooters? What if Stacy Keibler worked at that Hooters? It's not out of the realm of possibility.
I mean, honestly, a lot of women in wrestling have worked at Hooters at one point. Like, it's a weird... I mean, I guess, you know, if you got to flaunt it.
That's true. I never even thought about the fact that Stacy was a Ravens cheerleader and may have worked at that Hooters.
Yeah.
And it just closed down.
What, you weren't going to go?
Maybe.
So we're going to answer to this in a little bit. But yeah, we seemingly have a match for Bash the Beach.
We're doing good at building up that card.
Backstage, the Filthy Animals are all beat up besides for Disco. And he's like, oh, I'm fine. So I have a plan. Earlier today, Canyon's book signing is interrupted by Booker T, who attacks him, slams him through a table, and hits him with the brick-filled book. More like Bricker T.
Stop.
So yeah, I'm guessing these two are going to face each other at Bash the Beach as well, if that's not already official.
Yeah, because I mean, Canyon's not going to face DDP. Yeah. So, I mean, he's got to do something.
That said, that probably be a pretty good match.
That will be. What's the reasoning, though? Is it just like, okay, my question is, what is the reasoning behind Booker T attacking Canyon just now?
Just Booker came out last week and hit Canyon for his DDP bullshit. Because that's when he was suddenly no longer GI Bro.
Oh, yeah. Wow, I forgot.
And then Canyon hit Booker with the brick book.
The brick book. Okay, whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, that sounds like a match setup. It should be pretty good. But yeah. That could be good.
Look, I'm going to fucking take it, man. Don't question shit. Well, then we get Pamela Paulshock with Miss Hancock. Pamela just kind of talks shit of like, wow, you got your ass kicked out there. What is this gimmick on her?
I don't know, but I don't like it.
Yeah.
It's like...
the ditzy bitch.
She also was reading the cue cards real hard. Like, Pamela did not even attempt to memorize what she was trying to say. But it was very bitchy. It had a very bitchy undertone.
She does it later with Conan, too. I'm like, what?
Yeah.
But Miss Hancock agrees to the Bash the Beach match, but only if it's an evening gown match.
Not just an evening gown match.
Oh, sorry. Yes, a wedding dress match.
Yes.
I think my brain just auto-corrected. But Miss Hancock trashes Daphne's dress and says hers will be much more sexier.
Yes, and those are the words. Sexier. Much more sexier. Many much sexy.
Pamela. I can't wait!
I really can't tell if Pamela is trying to like be Stacy's friend or undercut her.
We then get the Disco Inferno coming out to the ring with a mic and a referee. Disco calls out Lance Storm and Storm obliges, is hitting a super kick and a top rope back elbow. Lance Storm counters a Disco move and then hits a drop kick and a suplex, but gets crotched going up to the top rope. Disco hits a running neck breaker and a Cobra Clutch Russian leg sweep. They seem to fuck up a weird sequence, so immediately just like go back to it. I didn't even know what the sequence was because it wasn't that notable. I'm like, yeah, he went back for that. Okay.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I was having a hard time following it as well.
Storm dodges Disco's dancing elbow and hits a Hurricane Rana. Storm then hits a cartwheel, kind of back handspring clothesline, and then a Northern Lights suplex. Disco tries for the last dance, but Storm counters and rolls through into a single leg Boston Crab. I fucking love that move.
Yeah, you got very excited for that move.
Disco submits for the win. Lance Storm is then almost immediately beat down by the Filthy Animals. So Billy Kidman then makes the save with a steel pipe, implying he was the one who hit everybody tonight.
He was the one behind the curtain. He's back, baby, and better than ever.
Yeah, I was doing the math at one point. I'm like, who could it be? Oh, Kidman. I mean, yeah. Like, once I thought of him, I'm like, oh, yeah, it's him. Duh.
He's wearing a new outfit, though, that I fucking hate.
Oh, yeah.
He did get a little bit of a haircut, which, not great. So, you know, his standard outfit is the white tank top and the long jorts, essentially.
I feel like he's been skipping the tank top lately. He's just been doing, like, the black jorts.
But now he came out in gym shorts.
Like white gym shorts, too.
Oh, my God. White gym shorts. It looked terrible. Oh, my God. So baggy. So frumpy. Mm-mm. Not my Billy.
Yeah. I think my brain just didn't suspect Billy Kidman at first because I'm like, did Lance Storm bring someone over with him to be his partner? I'm like, oh, no. It's just somebody else feuding with the Filthy Animals.
No. That would have been a good guess, though.
Storm and Kidman shake hands, confirming, like, yes, we are both faces now. This is fine. We're on the same page.
Hello, yes, I am face.
That's it. I am very much fine with these two teaming up for a little bit.
Oh, my God, yeah.
Yeah. This is a weird debut for Landstorm thus far, though. Because they have this problem constantly with Disco Inferno, where he's a capable hand. They have him wrestle longer matches, but they also portray him as a joke.
Right.
So if you can't beat Disco in like 2 minutes, wow, you must suck.
Yeah, exactly.
And then he wins and is immediately beat down, and his debut win is overshadowed by Billy Kidman kind of coming back after like a week off.
Right.
Like, yeah, weird debut for Landstorm.
I feel like I had this problem with Landstorm in WWE as well. Like, I didn't know what to make of him.
Yeah.
Because they didn't really know how to book him. He was just kind of like standard good technical wrestler. He never really had a personality to me in WWE, and that's like why I had a hard time connecting to him. I can acknowledge that he was good. He's very much like Dean Malenko to me, where he doesn't have much of a personality to like cling on to, but he's fucking good.
I will say, without any spoilers, Lance Storm is a talking head on the Bash of the Beach.
Oh, God.
Dark of the Ring. No, he's the voice of, like, the audience and reason of just, like, what the fuck, guys?
Oh, okay. Oh, my God. I'm so fucking excited to watch that episode.
But, I mean, I don't know. He had a character. He was serious.
That's not a character.
Emily, we will not tolerate any offbeat shenanigans on this podcast.
Okay, see, but that's different, though. Because that makes me think of Ivory in...
Right to Censor.
Yeah. She did not take on any offbeat shenanigans. That's better. That's a better way to do a serious character. Lance,
you realize
and Dean
I'm quoting
just,
Lance Storm saying,
"I know you are," but Lance and Dean are still like the very like
don't
no
bring
nonsense.
Dean Malenko into this for no reason.
But I'm comparing them because they're very similar style.
I know, but just don't bury my boy. Like
I'm not trying to bury. If I'm burying, I'm very sorry. They're very no nonsense. They're very just like let me get in, do my job well, and get out. Like, don't give me any of this fluff, faff, whatever. That's why, I feel like that's why you like those wrestlers and I am not as taken by them. Because I like the fluff and faff. You like the good technical wrestling.
Oh, you like faff?
I do.
Explain this next segment.
No.
No, go ahead. Do it. Yeah, you like the faff, Emily. Walk us through Dale Torborg heading to the basement of the building.
So Dale Torborg goes to meet up with Vampiro, finally answering that call that Vampiro placed earlier. They go to the basement, which is really just an unused wing of backstage. Like, this is just, like, a part of backstage that they were using. It's just dark.
Yeah.
It's storage. Whatever.
Yeah, like maintenance.
There's random trusts
yeah.
somewhere. I don't know. Unfortunately, the only note I have for this is, what the fuck is this?
You're so helpful.
I know, I'm really bad at taking
Emily has really started locking into, I take detailed notes so she doesn't have to.
Sorry. I know the ending.
Because Vampiro jumps off a random landing down here and attacks Torborg. Vampiro tries to hang Torborg as they just generally brawl through the area. And this is where I noted, he was probably wearing them earlier too, but Dale Torborg is wearing jeans with leather assless chaps over them.
Yes.
Not a great look.
Assless chaps are hard to pull off, man.
They brawl into some barrels and more nothing brawling as Vampiro ducks a shovel shot. Vampiro spin kicks Torborg and throws him around. And then Vampiro kicks Dale into a coffin, which is randomly here.
Yeah, why is there a coffin backstage?
All of a sudden, someone in a hood and a sting mask knocks out Vampiro and then puts the sting mask on Vampiro's face. We do not pan up.
So who are your theories? Do you know who it is?
It's obviously Christopher Daniels. It's spooky mystery.
That can't be your answer for
Emily,
everything.
It's a spooky mystery. It's obviously Christopher Daniels. Sorry, maybe it's Jake the Snake. That's the other one they always
Jesus
fucking...
Jesus Christ.
Well, commentary's like, oh, it can't be... No. It could... Just say Sting. Just say it's going to be fucking Sting.
But we thought we'd never see him again. Like, he's not dead. We would know if he was dead, guys. Yeah, so commentary is convinced that it's Sting, even though this man is about a foot shorter than Sting.
Oh, I think it's gonna be Sting. I think they just didn't bring Sting in for this.
Oh, really? I thought they were pulling like a Russo sort of...
Well, the funny thing is, initially...
Fake Sting sort of thing.
I was like, oh, it's probably Asia. And then commentary makes fun of Mark Madden for going, yeah, it's Asia.
Yeah, so I guess not.
I'm like, it would logically... Minus the Sting mask portion, but like, kind of makes sense to be Asia. But yeah, I feel like it's just... Sting's gonna be back.
Yeah, you're probably right.
The body
double is pretty bad if this is meant to be Sting.
Better or worse than the stuntman?
Worse, because the stuntman was at least convincing in body shape.
I thought you were gonna say the stuntman was at least on fire.
No, I'm saying this fake Sting is about a foot shorter and about 45 pounds heavier.
Well, I think you're supposed to see him for all of 4 seconds.
But you saw enough?
You know, it's Ralphus.
Oh my God.
Spooky Ralphus.
Oh my god. I would die.
Emily, it's not Spooky Ralphus. I would
die. That would be amazing.
I started to like dangle that in front of you. It's just not on the table.
That would be so good. Spooky Ralphus. Stop.
We then get Pamela Paul Shock here with the Filthy Animals. Wow, you guys really fucking suck tonight. That's so embarrassing.
Okay, Mrs. Murder, She Wrote.
I figured it out. I think Billy Kidman was attacking you guys.
Got it. Good job.
Yeah, that's what prompted the Murder, She Wrote. It's like, yeah,
no duh. Kidding. Thanks, so, Nancy Drew.
Yeah, Conan calls her stupid and then challenges Storm and Kidman to a tag match on Thunder, which maybe when I'm picking in, I'll call you in and be like, hey, come watch this.
Yeah, we're pitching matches for Thunder now?
Apparently.
We're booking Thunder cards? All right.
But that brings us to our main event.
Woo!
Now, Emily, I'll ask you, do you want to talk about this now, or do you want to talk about this when we see him again, that we discovered Michael Buffer is in the movie Dumbo?
Oh.
Do you want to do it now, or do you want to do it at Bash the Beach when we see him again?
I think we need to do it now, because it's so fresh.
Okay. You have the floor.
This was the most random text that Nick has ever sent me. So the live action, quote unquote, remake of Dumbo that came out a couple of years ago. We didn't see it. We didn't watch it. Who cares? No one should have seen that movie. Why did they make it? Randomly, out of nowhere, Nick sends me a clip from this movie while I'm sitting at work. And so I watch it. It's Michael Buffer in Dumbo doing a full ring introduction of the fucking elephant. Full ending with, ladies and gentlemen, let's get ready for Dumbo!
It's so fucking stupid.
Oh my god. What was the budget for that movie?
Clearly not that much, because they couldn't say Rumble. They had to change it.
How did we not know that Michael Buffer was in Dumbo?
I said credit to a pitch meeting, because that's how I found it.
Oh, there you go.
They put in like the little bit of that, and I went, what the fuck is this? I need to find this clip.
Lord knows you weren't just looking up videos from Dumbo 2019. Yeah,
no, it's not about Beetlejuice and weird Tim Burton shit.
Did Tim Burton do that Dumbo?
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Which, somehow that makes that even weirder.
It does.
That Tim Burton hired Michael Buffer. That's some Mad Libs bullshit right there.
It is. That is Mad Libs.
But yeah. WCW Nitro main event. It's Jeff Jarrett versus Goldberg versus Kevin Nash versus Scott Steiner for the WCW title.
Let's go. I'm sure this match will be very, very long and have a lot of in-ring intrigue.
Yeah, before Nash even comes out, we see that Goldberg has taken out Kevin Nash.
Cool.
Kevin, I'm not working two matches. What are you, a fucking mark, dude?
Two matches. He'll be in the ring for a total of 5 minutes.
Jeff Jarrett attacks Steiner from behind and stomps him in the ring until we get a Steiner press slam. Steiner pulls Jeff Jarrett into a trio woe and stomps him. And then Steiner hits a tilt-a-whirl slam, and Goldberg finally comes out to the ring and press power slams Steiner. I love that move.
Yeah, that seems like a move that you would love.
Goldberg signals for the spear, but Steiner dodges and hits a spinning belly-to-belly, but Jeff Jarrett breaks the pin up. Steiner hits a tiger bomb on Jarrett, but the numbers game gets to him shortly. Goldberg locks an armbar on Steiner as Jeff Jarrett stomps Steiner. And I have to ask the question there. What if Scott Steiner tapped out? There's very clearly a plan of Jeff Jarrett's going to retain here. And you locked in a submission. You should not do that.
No, that's true.
That's also a spot I want to see in wrestling, where someone like loses on purpose to fuck up like a team's chemistry.
Oh.
The problem is that it does imply someone's losing on purpose on top of losing on purpose.
Yeah, that's true.
Jeff Jarrett keeps posing for the crowd, and suddenly Mike Awesome comes out. He steals the U.S. title from Medeja as Steiner starts to come back and power bombs Jeff Jarrett. Steiner hits a power slam on Jarrett, but Steiner is pulled out of the ring by Awesome and is hit with the U.S. title. Kevin Nash then runs out awkwardly past Mike Awesome here.
Yeah.
And just starts beating down Jarrett. Like, nope, he's fine. Nash hits a choke slam and then power bombs Awesome. And when Kevin Nash power bombs Mike Awesome, Scott Hudson said some shit that made me want to fight Scott Hudson.
Oh, no.
This should be a disqualification.
Oh, should it?
One, it's a fatal four-way, so there's no DQ. Two, what happened to the fucking lax rules, WCW, Scott? Three, Mike Awesome has actually not hit Kevin Nash, so it wouldn't be a DQ.
Oh my god.
Four, Kevin's doing fucking fine on top of all that. So even your little, oh, he needs help. No, he doesn't, you fucker. Five, fuck you.
6, learn how to do your fucking job.
7, Mike Awesome just hit Scott Snyder with a fucking title belt, which is an outside weapon.
That's a weapon shot. Your DQ there.
But again, it's still a fatal four-way, so it's no DQ.
Correct.
Because who wins the title then? That's why you can't do a DQ in a multi-man match. Jarrett stops a powerbomb to Goldberg, so Nash tries to powerbomb Jarrett. Goldberg hits a big sidekick, and Jeff Jarrett pins Nash off that. Kind of weird. Goldberg celebrates as the pin happens, so yeah, he's fine not winning the title.
Yeah.
Weird that the sidekick got it. Like, hit him with a spear. Like, what are you doing?
Yeah, I'm kind of confused why they didn't do the spear as the finisher.
Spear him in the kidneys. What are you doing, Goldberg?
This man has 2 kidneys.
It's doubly as effective.
Double the target. Double the goals.
Double the fun.
Double the pleasure.
Goldberg then has a bit of the Scott Hall contract because he pulls out of his trunks and taunts Nash with it as we go off the air. What a fucking mess of an ending.
It happened so fast, too.
Yeah, because Nash just, like, jogs out to the ring past the weird, awesome Steiner beatdown happening. And then just like, oh, yeah, no, he's fine. He got taken out? No, he didn't.
No, he didn't.
You're crazy.
Even if he did, fuck you, who cares?
No, that was Kevin Nash kissing Jeff Jarrett. That wasn't anything. You're crazy.
Yeah, this is a pretty wild ending to a pretty forgettable show altogether.
Yeah, it feels like they're stalling.
It does.
And they probably are. Because, again, who's Jeff Jarrett facing the pay-per-view?
Hogan.
You know who's not fucking here?
Hogan.
Yeah. He was not here next week?
Yeah. Jeff Jarrett has nothing to do other than sit in the back and be forgotten.
Oh, don't worry. He'll something next week.
Oh, God.
Per the thumbnail for next week. I'm like, oh, why is Jeff Jarrett with 3... large Viking-looking opera singers.
Oh, God.
But that's next week. Emily, thoughts on this week?
It was, honestly, we had more fun talking about it than the show deserved.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Yeah, this is, like, you gotta say, it's fine. I mean, like, I'll give it credit in that, like, it had setup and payoff in terms of this show, but almost because of that, it felt self-contained.
It did.
Like, it felt like this was like a house show.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. Like, you could watch this episode with no context of what else is going on and be fine.
Admittedly, very little actual story progression.
Yeah.
Weirdly, I think the most story progression probably comes from Miss Hancock and Daphne.
Yeah, and maybe Booker T and Canyon.
Even then.
It's minimal.
I mean, yeah, we're slowly building matches that I'm like, okay, these have some potential.
Oh, yeah, and we will probably have a full card before we even get to Bash at the Beach, which is rare.
Now, I'd say, with Goldberg and Nash on the pay-per-view, are we going to see a stun gun?
Please don't.
I mean, it's for Scott Hall's contract, Emily.
And there is a dark side of the ring about it. But I feel like you would have alluded to the fact that that's not the end of the stun gun. You would know, and you would say something. You're bad at keeping secrets, too, okay?
I continue to wonder how much Vince Russo's plans they're allowed to stray away from. Like, are they under the directive of, like, okay, you can't go too far? Or is it like, we don't know when he's coming back, so you have free reign? Because if this is the biggest thing that's really happened that differs from the Russo time, is he's back to being Booker T. Like, that's still the biggest thing.
Yeah, I guess so.
Because this would have been the week to pivot to, like, oh no, Goldberg's a face again, like, right. Whatever. But I guess maybe we'll see what happens after the pay-per-view, because that's kind of when resets and everything happens.
Exactly,
so.
Yeah. We are in a holding pattern. So nothing's going to change for the next couple weeks. We have two weeks?
No.
A week. One more episode.
Which is a great pitch for that episode. Nothing's going to happen.
Well, I mean, we made something out of this. Come on.
Well, I guess let's get something out of this with best bit, worst bit, and MVP. Emily, what is your best bit?
We have to have the same one.
I think it's too isolated.
It's a bit, babe.
But it's not like the bit worth watching the show for.
Oh, no. And that's not always what the best bit is.
Yeah. But yeah, what's your bit?
It's Steiner flipping off Buff.
Yeah, that is a great bit.
It popped. It gave me something to live for. It's not worth, like, watching the whole episode for, but it was something.
I did love that, but I'm going to give my best bit to something that was actually effective. And I'm going to give it to Jim Duggan versus Goldberg. I thought that was... I don't agree with the direction you're taking, but if that's the direction you're taking, you did a good job on it.
I think my best bit is more like, if you are trapped in a room forced to watch this show, you at least have this to look forward to.
Emily, what is your worst bit?
Tank Abbott.
Still.
Tank Abbott's new storyline and the direction that they're taking him. I don't like it. I don't like Tank Abbott, period, but this is not how I want him to be utilized.
I actually think I'm going to pass on a worst bit this one.
Really?
Nothing really grabs me as, like, terribly offensive. Close I'm getting is the three count and perfect event match and the post of that. But the problem is my MVP is three count.
Oh, really?
I thought they did great with what they had. And I'm like, so I can't give that worst bit because I think they were the best thing on the show.
Okay. I do like tend to forget that worst bit is technically optional.
Yeah.
But no, I gave my MVP for the same reason that you gave your best bit. I gave it to Jim Duggan. He succeeded in conveying the message that needed to be conveyed.
Yeah. There's very few people you could put in there to get Goldberg booed. And yeah, he was one of them.
And he did it well.
That's going to do it for our review of the June 26, 2000 WWE Monday Nitro. Next up, we're in July. July Woo-hoo! 3rd Nitro.
Time to get to that July pay-per-view.
Yeah. Who knows what it's called?
We'll never know.
Maybe if you scour our back catalog on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else, you can maybe figure out what last July's pay-per-view was called.
Yeah, maybe context clues might figure it out, too.
Social media, at Butts in the Pod, Facebook, Butts in the Seats Podcast. And then over on our Patreon, patreon.com/buttsintheseats, $5 a month gets you 20 bonus episodes,
Woo!
Including out today, we reviewed the movie.
The documentary, please.
The Jesse Ventura Story, with a lot more WCW than we fucking thought.
And a lot more revisionist history than I anticipated.
Somehow more than I did, too. Because
what a time.
Now, all right, which bit is worse to you? The Raven bit or the Goldberg bit?
Goldberg. The Goldberg bit, yeah.
Oh, I think the Raven bit's worse.
I don't know, man.
But to know what those bits are, yeah, I have to go over there. $5 a month. 20 bonus episodes, the new Monday Night Wars. A lot of fun stuff over there.
Yeah. And I've been just kind of talking about TV shows that I'm watching over there, too.
Oh, but that's going to do it for this episode of the Butts and Seats podcast. Emily, any closing thoughts? After this, we enter our podcast anniversary month, so 3 episodes in October.
Yeah, this is going to be coming up on, what, year 5 of the podcast?
Oh, the start of year 5 after
this. The start of year 5, yeah.
That's the 4-year anniversary.
That's crazy.
But Emily, we're so close to Bash at the Beach. Emily, I got one more episode. But until that episode, I'm Nick.
I'm Emily.
And thanks for listening to the Butts in the Seats podcast.
Bye.